All right, we are ready for part two of Can or Keep for the 2019-2020 Chicago Bulls. And here to help me sort through this is the host of the Chicago Bulls Eye Podcast, co-host of Bulls HQ, and a frequent contributor to NBC Sports Chicago and the Waddle and Sylvie Show. You know him as C. Red Fred. Fred, how you doing, buddy?
Brandon, friend of years, friend of tears. I hope you're doing well, my friend, in these rough times, but hopefully there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're going to start seeing basketball and eventually brighter days. I hope you're doing well, brother.
I am doing great. Hope we get to see some basketball. Kind of. I'm kind of up in the air about the restart, but it's going to be a long time before we see Bulls basketball, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, so. That's what I find so insane and you know, somewhat disappointing. So I had a poll yesterday. I'd like to get your opinion on this poll. Are you disappointed that a healthy Bulls team will not be participating in a continued NBA season in Florida this summer, with or without Boylan, was the question. First question would be, did you see the poll and did you see the results? And then what's your answer?
I did, and I voted in. I said I am disappointed. I wanted to see him play. I was trying to remember the standings. They're not far behind. I think it was the Wizards. They were like two games back of the Wizards. Or 2.5 games back from the Wizards from what the Wizards were for competing for that 8th spot. So, like, I guess 8 games back. So they could have caught up. But I still wanted to see them play. I still hope they have some opportunity to actually do something this summer. I mean, 9 months is just – you're talking that's a long time to go without – not just from a fan's perspective, but from a professional basketball player. That's a long time to play.
That's my point. And I was shocked at the results. So 71% said, you know, no, I'm good until December. And then 28% said, you know, they wanted to see more. And my whole point is here, like, every single game or every minute that Wendell Carter Jr., Larry Markkinen, Zach LaVine, and Kobe White play together is beneficial for valuation purposes. Absolutely. They have not played together enough, not together remotely enough. In 8 games, everybody's like, that's only 8 games. 8 games is, you know, probably what? They probably played together a total of maybe 8 games.
Right.
Maybe it's slightly more than that, but not much more. And
no.
It's bizarre to me. Like, we went into the season with that question on each one of these players. Can Lauri Markkanen take a jump? Can Wendell Carter take a jump? Can Zach LaVine be the best player on a winning team? I don't think any of those questions have been answered. In fact, I think I've got more questions than answers than I did before. Oh. And it's bizarre that people are just like, oh, we'll just wait for December. I'm good. No, I kind of want to know. You know, I kind of want to know. I kind of want to see what we have here. And I feel like I'm in a bizarre world. And the fact that Boylan still had coach is beyond belief to me. It's already, you know, June. And there's no good excuses for any of these things. But, you know, I've been used to kind of like, strange takes in the world of Bulls fans for the last couple of years.
It's been crazy, and we're going to talk about Boylan in depth here in a little bit, I think. And I think you and I are in total agreement on him and why he's still the head coach of this team. I don't know. I mean, we could start there if you want. We can start with Jim Boylan. You want to start with Jim Boylan instead? I think Zach LaVine might be more interesting than Boylan. I think I'm not even going to go over his contract. For all the Can or Keep, I try to go through the players' contracts and that kind of stuff. I could go through Boylan's, I guess, if I could find it.
But nobody really knows what it is, right? It's kind of like another mystery. Like, you know, who knows how much he's making? Can't be a lot.
Either way, he's overpaid. So,
yeah. no argument here. I mean, yeah, I've never seen a more incompetent head coach as coach of the Chicago Bulls. His team is far more talented than the record. They finished, you know, 22-43 this season, and he was a complete embarrassment. And, you know, I think he's significantly hurt the development of Wendell Carter Jr. I've questioned everything they've done on the offensive end with him. I think he's got immense talent as a playmaker, passer. And they use him like a traditional low post center. It's incredibly stupid. Lauri Markkanen's taking a step back. I think a lot is on the coaching. They haven't been able to, you know, bring out the best in what he can do. But big picture, the guy's he's not a leader of men. You know, it's clear the team doesn't believe in him. And that happens when you play favorites. You know, he's got a son that he loves, and he loves to play him at the three when he has no business being there. there, and he had better answers off the bench. He was clear to everyone with, you know, an IQ over 50 that Denzel Valentine should have been playing at the three this year. He benched him for his own stupid reasons, and none of us know because he refused to elaborate on them. You know, his answer was, "I said so." Just total disaster as a head coach. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't know basketball. I'm sure he does. I'm sure he's a, just some guys are made to be an assistant, and that's what he should be. So
yeah,
hopefully he'll join Tibbs in New York and get out of our hair.
It's absolutely incomprehensible to me that he's been around this much greatness in his career. Because he coached, if you look at his resume, I mean, he was an assistant, with Houston maybe back in the 90s. And then he was also an assistant on those Spurs team that were battling Miami here in the 2010s. He's been around great coaches, great talent. And to be this big of a buffoon is just unbelievable for me. I know that we have a new management regime and all that. These things actually happened here this season. I wrote about this a couple months ago. We had a fan stare Jim Boylan in the eye and call him a clown as he exited the court. It has it on video. We had Boylan and LaVine butting heads early in the season, and LaVine actually came out and said he had a lack of trust from Boylan. We had Wendell Carter. He actually liked a tweet from me. I don't know if you saw this. He liked a tweet from me questioning if the coaching staff had basically instructed them to ignore mid-range jumpers, even if the defenses were ignoring them. And he actually liked the tweet when I retweeted the video on it. And if NBC Sports Chicago was like sharing, saying, "Wendell liked this tweet, and well, this is good." I mean, just the way he used Lauri Markkanen as basically like a 7-foot Steve Kerr. He just had him hanging around the 3-point line with no creativity offensively. I don't even know what the word is. Why is he still the coach? I don't understand why he wasn't gone just immediately. And I know they want to evaluate him and all that. Go back and watch the games. Go back and read the quotes. He used a Field of Dreams quote earlier this year to make an excuse for one of his blunders. And it's like, it's just a joke. And it goes back to last season with that leadership committee and all that stuff. I mean, the Bulls are just a laughing stock at that point. And it's just gotten worse this season. He doesn't need to be the head coach. It's time to move on from him. And it's just everything I saw this year just blew my mind. And part of me feels bad for him because I think he's kind of a yes man. I think this is how Paxson wanted to play. They didn't have an understanding of the pace and space that the NBA has kind of transitioned to. And I think they wanted a coach who would just say, "Okay, we'll play this way." And they shot a bunch of threes when they didn't really have the personnel to shoot threes. And if you believe Joe Cowley, Paxson went to the man.
Well, that's the thing. I'll disagree with that statement, though. Like, Denzel Valentine's one of the best 3-point shooters on the team, and he didn't play. Yeah.
But he didn't play.
So if you're gonna have a team that shoots threes, it doesn't pass well, and again, Valentine's one of the better passers, doesn't rebound well, Valentine's one of the better rebounders, you gotta use the personnel in your roster on your team. And for whatever reason, he liked to play favorites and he liked to play guys that, you know, were good at football, all this other nonsense he would talk about. I mean,
he started Shaq Harrison at small forward some games.
Yeah,
Shaq Harrison, his favorites. Who can't
he
shoot.
Loves Shaq Harrison. He loves the try hard guys, you know, that he sees himself in. You know, Ryan A., all these guys, I love, you know, how hard they play. It doesn't win you games. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jim. His treatment of Jabari Parker was inexcusable last year. Just inexcusable. Unreal. And, you know, no matter how you feel about Jabari Parker.
He's a good player.
Yeah, as good as
he's
played.
He's at least a good scorer.
Yes, as a scorer, you have to use your talent. You just don't bench him for your own, you know, arbitrary reasons. Just, you know, as far as the fan yelling clown, I've never been a fan of that stuff. Like, you should be insulting in front, you know, children are watching that and there's other people watching it in front of them. It's, come on, that's kind of, to me, like a waste of calories. But
it is,
you know, to criticize legitimately what he's done is absolutely acceptable and right. You know, as a head coach, you know, I coached grammar school basketball and I played high school basketball. As a head coach, I think in the NBA in general, the position's a little bit overrated. I don't think you have as much influence. Talent wins in general in the NBA. But the things you do have say on rotations, timeouts, and, you know, your interaction with the press and your, as a representative of the organization, those are the three major things. He's failed miserably on all accounts, you know. So his timeouts were a joke this year, calling timeouts when you're down by 20 plus and pissing off the opposition and his own team. It's just so incredibly stupid. You know, what a guy's learning. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it just, and his excuses, just insanity. His post-game, yeah, as a communicator, he's not a communicator. It's part, that's part of the job. You got to be able to communicate with the press and stand up there and be a leader and not and be able to get your message across, not just to players, but to, which is the most important thing, but to the press and the fans. And he's not capable of doing that. He just sounds like a complete buffoon.
Yes. You know? Oh, I don't.
I can't believe it's June 26th, and he's still the head. June 25th, he's still the head coach of Chicago Bulls. It's mind numbing to me.
I just don't understand. Like, the only thing I can assume is that they're still talking about playing more games, possibly with this, the eight teams that didn't go to or are not going to Orlando, and they don't want to have to deal with that till the season's officially over for them. I feel like it's officially over. I don't think they're gonna play anything of value, but. I don't see any reason to give him another go around next year at all.
Oh, my gosh. That would be – if he's back as head coach, that would be, I think all goodwill with this new team. Because to me, the biggest mistake of John Paxson and Gar Forman was the hiring of Jim Boylan.
Yes.
I thought they did a good job in the draft picks. I do believe in Coby White. I do believe in Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. I thought those were all excellent picks, and your head coach failed you. And yes. He's an absolute embarrassment. And this guy's still the head coach. Like, it's bizarre world. It's bizarre world. But, I'm not going to get too upset until he's actually still here next year. And if that right. happens, it's going to lose faith and just as much faith in new org as I had in the old.
Absolutely. So we're both in agreement to can Jim Boylan. In an ideal world, the Bulls would can Jim Boylan.
Yes. Yeah, I thought he should have been. I gave him a chance, and it was extremely apparent, utterly apparent within the first 2 weeks. This guy needed to go. So, no doubt about that.
I 100% agree. So, let's talk about somebody that we have a lot more love for. We're out of everybody in Bulls Nation, Bulls Twitter, you don't find two people usually that agree on this guy, and we are two guys that agree on him. Let me give the people some context. Denzel Valentine, his contract, he's actually an expiring contract. He becomes a free agent this offseason. Averaged 6.8 points a game, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, shot only 40% from the field. And then 30% from 3.
Is he a restricted free agent? I think he's a restricted free agent.
I think he is a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
He should be on his rookie deal. So, yeah, he's on his rookie deal, so he'll be a restricted free agent. So, Fred, I ask you, can or keep Denzel Valentine?
Well, if Jim Boylan's still the head coach for Denzel's sake, I hope he goes somewhere else. I still think he has incredible ability to help a team. I think he's absolutely a rotation player. He could be a spot starter. I think if he's given the opportunity to play consistently and not feel like he has to perform a game's worth of moments in, 10 minutes and limited minutes, I think he's going to absolutely help your team and help your team win. He's been a winner at every level up until he became a pro and joined this organization. But there's nothing on the offensive end that Valentin doesn't do well. He rebounds, shoots the ball well. He's a great playmaker, and he's a good ball handler. I think all those skills, he's a great rebounder. All those skills are extremely underrated. Defensively, he does have his limitations. As I said before, though, he's got tremendous length, and that covers up a lot of limitations. To me, at worst, he's a backup 2-3.
Yeah.
At best, he could even start, on some teams as a 2 or 3.
I agree.
It's bizarre, I think, the way that the guy's been – especially since he's had some really, really nice moments. He had a great game against the Clippers this year. Mm-hmm. Incredible performance against the Miami Heat at the end of a game. Really put the fear of God in the Heat after they almost blew a big lead because of Valentine's performance. I just wish he was given the opportunity to perform. Hasn't happened here. Yeah. So,
wholeheartedly.
But I think if I were the Bulls, I'd absolutely, offer him, tender him a contract and bring him back. I don't think anybody's going to give him a big deal, and I think he's going to perform for the team as a rotation player.
Absolutely. I could not understand for most season why he wasn't playing. if you're trying to play with pace and space, if you're trying to really have a modern NBA offense, he's the guy you need on the court, especially when you're playing, like I said, Shaq Harrison at small forward. And Shaq Harrison, I mean, come on. He can't shoot. And not only him, but Otto Porter. I mean, Kobe White's not a great three-point shooter. He was struggling. It's not his game. Chris Dunn can't shoot. Satoransky didn't shoot well from three this year. So, if you're trying to open up driving lanes for Zach LaVine and even opportunities for Lauri Markkanen to get to the rim, you want Valentine on the court to space the floor. And I just don't understand why in the world he just rotted away on the bench for the majority of the season. Absolutely, it was absolutely ridiculous as it was happening, and I still think it's ridiculous. I don't think the Bulls are going to try to re-sign him. I'd keep him. I don't think they're going to try to. But I could also see the peak of his career being the guy, you know, game seven of the NBA Finals, that he hits that three and the other team calls timeout while Mike Breen's yelling, puts it in, you know, that kind of thing, as they're going to commercial, and like Danny Green kind of did, has made a career out of it. I think that could be Denzel Valentine on a really good team, and I just don't think he's going to be here in Chicago. I think he's going to move on to a different situation. And
yeah, there you go. 13.6 minutes per game, which was 14th on the team. To put that in perspective, Daniel Gafford averaged more per game. Luke Kornet, Ryan A., and Cristiano Felicio averaged more minutes per game than Denzel Valentine. Every time I look at that stat and I think about it, I just want to, you know, throw a basketball at Jim Boylan's head. But I you know, my better nature gets the best of me, and I relent, and I don't do it. It's just maddening. I almost don't want to talk about it, or else I'll go into a depression.
We're definitely in agreement on him. This next guy, we are not in agreement on, I have a feeling, which might surprise you. Ryan Arcidiacono. So he's got 2 years left on his deal. Next, the last year being a team option, $3 million. This year, not great numbers. What was it? 4.5 points a game. 40% from the field. 39% from three, which is amazing. Almost two rebounds, almost two assists. It's a little bit shy.
Quite amazing when you consider every shot he took from three, there was probably not a defender within 7 feet of him. I've never seen a guy more overrated than Ryan A. I mean, I love it. You know, the coach's son, he tries hard. He's fine as a third string point guard. The guy shouldn't be in a rotation for a winning team. It's clear as day. I don't understand why people, you know, he's like a poor man's Heinrich. It's the same thing. It's people overestimating his accomplishments, his ability. He's not a great athlete. He's not a great defender. All he does is he tries hard. He plays really hard. And that's great. You know, there's something to be admired. I have no problem with him being on the roster, but I have a major problem with him being in a rotation and playing more than Denzel Valentine or even, heck, Shaq Harrison. I like Shaq Harrison more than I do Ryan A. And, you know, when it comes down to it, people like will point at the stats. Well, I shot 39% from three. Again, I can't stress this enough. Nobody pays attention to Ryan A on a court. And when he doesn't shoot, when there's anyone near him, and he doesn't create, and he doesn't make it easier for his teammates. That's just a fact, because he's not good enough to. He's a great football player. And I understand why Coach Boylan loves him. You know, there's all these other great things about him. He's a nice kid, and I wish him the best, but I don't want him in a rotation. I don't think he's good enough for a good team.
Absolutely. I fully agree with everything you said. But I'm gonna push back a little bit. I'm not a fan of Ryan Arcidiacono at all. But for some reason, every time I watched the game, I always felt like he made an impact. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just my imagination. But I always felt like there was a play that he would make that had a positive impact on the game. And I'm like, I guess I can see why they would play it. Let me give
you. We had a lot of negative impacts too. I remember there was a stretch where he shot under. You know, he was just shooting terrible right around. It was right around the time I was on Bulls Outsiders. I think he was shooting under 20% from three. He's not. I don't. You can pick out one. It's like I said, he is the coach's son. Like every little thing that he would do, Boylan would highlight it. I'll never forget that post game where he sat there and he was talking about Ryan A. And it was like the guy had like 6 points and he goes, he's a hell of a basketball player. It's just like, you never said that about Zach LaVine. And you're talking about Ryan A. like he's like, you know, give me a, you know, Bob Cousy or something. Give me a break. Pound sand, both you guys. I just can't wait to see, you know, both these guys, you know, kind of off the roster. It's nothing I have against him as a kid. He's a great kid. He's just not good. Yeah. He's not great. And he's like one of those guys that the fan base always overrates.
Can I give you a blind comparison with another player for the first 3 years of his career?
David Nwaba?
No, definitely not. This one's going to infuriate you. So Archidiakono averaged, for the first 3 years of his career, averaged 5.2 points, 2.5 assists, 2.2 rebounds, 43% from the field and 37% from three in 19 minutes. Player B averaged 5.1 points, 3.2 assists, only one rebound, shot 48% from the field, 27% from three in 16 minutes per game.
And you're going to say John Paxson?
That's exactly what I'm going to say.
I knew you were going to throw that in there. Yeah.
And the only reason I bring this up is he was in a bad situation in San Antonio early his career. Then you actually watched Jordan's 63-point game. He's playing behind Kyle Macy. And it's like he's almost like an afterthought of the team. And it wasn't until Doug Collins came in and gave him some time and they found some other talent around Jordan that Paxson really came into his own. And I don't know. Maybe that's Archidiakono.
This is one of the worst comparisons of all time. Come on. I don't know what to tell you, Brandon. I mean, come on. Listen, Pax, there are a few bulls in history that I felt better about shooting a basketball than John Paxson, especially when the game mattered most. And it's part of the reason I still love the man is, I still go back to the first title, hitting those shots in Q4 of Game 5. You know, I think he had 20 points hitting the big shot against the Suns. Do you think I've ever felt that remotely like when Ryan A's gone up for a jumper that's flat and, you know, give me a break. Come on.
Watch Game 5 of the 91 Finals. Paxson was the key to that 91 Finals when finishing off the Lakers in that Game 5. He was on fire for a lot of the game. That's my hope. I'm not saying he's going to jump packs. Here's my overall point with him. If you're going to have Zach LaVine as your focal point of your team and Lowry Markkanen needs touches, you're going to want a guy that has a similar style, not necessarily Archidiakono, but a similar style to him playing off of them that will defend and do the dirty work and just hit open shots. I don't know if it's him. But they're going to need somebody like that. And Satoransky was supposed to be that, and he just
He was awful. Shot 33% from three. I mean, come on. It's terrible. There's no excuse.
He's the ball poo. So I don't know. I'm hoping that a new coach is going to come in, figure this thing out. We're going to be looking back at Archidiakono hitting game winners in the NBA Finals in like 7 years. I'm not a Bulls prophet like you are, but –
maybe in the G League finals, I could see him making some big shots.
Former league, is he still eligible?
Who knows? I saw him playing the G League. He was probably like the eighth best player in the court, but somehow he's playing in the NBA. I don't know how that happened. Anyhow, enough about Ryan A. I do want to say you just threw something out there about Zach. Like, again, that's another frustrating thing about this season. Like, I don't know if Zach LaVine, there's so many questions now. And I was really hoping to get it solved. Can he be the best player on a team that makes the playoffs? I have no idea. Even less so than I did before. You know, he did so many great things this year. I think Zach LaVine was the least of our problems. But still, at the end of the games, there were always issues I've had. You know, I didn't think great decision-making. A lot of forced shots. And there wasn't a ton of talent around him. So you can't necessarily all blame it on Zach. But I don't know, man. I still have questions. Like, his defense, again, very poor. Again, the least of our problems, but can the Bulls win, you know, be a top five team in the East, top three team in the East with Zach LaVine as the best player? I don't know. I have no idea.
The evidence is really mounting against him. We'll talk about him in a minute. Let's do Wendell Carter real quick. We'll rip through him. Wendell Carter, just to give the listeners an idea of what his contract looks like. He's on a rookie deal, so he has 2 years left. His last year's a team option. It's like $5.5 million next year and $6.9 million the final year. This season, averaged 11 points, 9 rebounds, only an assist, less than a block a game, less than a steal a game. Shot 53% from the field in about 29 minutes a game, thereabouts. So, Fred, would you can or keep Wendell?
I absolutely keep him. I think he's one of the most misused players on the roster, especially in the offensive end. I think he's already elite defensively, and he's 20 years old. I think in 3 years he can be absolutely incredible. I don't understand, though, why he gained so much weight. I was at the United Center today at a practice, public practice in October. I think it was the first week of October, and I could not believe how huge Wendell Carter looked. Like, not fat, but he's
big,
legitimate 270.
Gosh.
Just massive. He looked like a Hulk. And it's like, I don't know if that's the best way to go in today's NBA. At college, I thought he had a good frame. He's like 249, quick. And I think it slowed him down a little bit. I don't think it was the best for him. I think it potentially led to the ankle injury, is having so much weight on him. And I kind of hope he does kind of slim down. I know he's eager to – he keeps on saying he wants to play the power forward position. I think he's a center. But the Bulls do not utilize him correctly. He's got excellent passing skills. He didn't – they rarely ran him out of the high post. I think he should be playing in the high post, taking advantage of his passing skills. They never do that. And he's not a low post player. He's not a guy with a back-to-basket player, which they continually try to do. And I don't know why he hasn't developed as a shooter. I think he shot 40% in college from three. He's got that ability. He's got a beautiful jump shot and just hasn't happened. I blame a lot on coaching, a little bit on him. But I'm still a big believer in Wendell Carter Jr.
I am too. I 100% agree with everything you said. I think he's a better shooter than what we've seen. I think one of the problems with the Bulls' offense is I called it arbitrary ball movement, where the ball would just kind of bounce back and forth, but it really didn't accomplish anything. And so there was a lot of contested shots. And I think the other thing was guys weren't in the position for their best success. And I think Carter, in particular, would do better from the corner shooting threes. And he was rarely out there if he was shooting a three. It always seemed like he was kind of in between the corner and the wing, and that's an awkward shot anyways. I wholeheartedly agree with him. I love his game. I love his attitude. I love his demeanor. He showed qualities of leadership. I think he has a good voice in the locker room, whereas somebody like Zach LaVine doesn't – I don't know if he's a leader. He hasn't really – when he does speak up, it almost seems like he's speaking out for himself instead of the team, if that makes sense. Wendell seems to be more of a chemistry guy that's trying to keep the thing together. So let me ask you this question kind of in relation to Wendell and also Lowry. Do you think this roster makes sense, like the way it's constructed? Because you have Markkanen, who really he can't really play center, I don't think. You have Wendell, who, like you said, he wants to play power forward. Then you have Thaddeus Young, who is a power forward. And you have Felicio, who shouldn't really play. But then you have Gafford, who's a center. It's like, how do you find the minutes for all these guys at those two positions?
I thought the roster made sense. We just had so many injuries that it's hard to, really make sense of anything. You know, like a key guy that nobody talks about is like Chandler Hutchinson. He's a three. He's an excellent defender. He's got great athletic ability. He was a key guy this year. He hardly played again. Because he's hurt. And I thought that was a kid, that we were looking for like a step up. And he did absolutely have flashes and showed signs as I think a guy who quickly could become a player in the rotation off the bench at the backup three position. And then eventually maybe even grow into a starter. Otto Porter Jr., another key guy on this team, played 14 games. Everything, he was so key to the team because he's one of the better defenders at the three. And he can hit the three, stretch the floor for players like Markkanen and LaVine to succeed. It's the thing about basketball. Just so much is dependent. There's little things that happen that really can throw a wrench in the works that really negatively impact or negatively affect if you lose a player that's kind of key like that. And Otto Porter absolutely was one of those players. The team, we saw it last year, So he's a guy who makes everyone better. And so I think, losing two guys in Otto Porter Jr. and Hutch at the three made the roster look a little bit different or worse than it really was. I've heard this argument ad nauseum from Dog Bowl Nation. Well, they should have had, more three. It's so stupid. It's so incredibly stupid. You don't have six threes on the roster, all great players. Every NBA team is looking for a three. They had three legit threes. Otto Porter Jr., Chandler Hutchinson, and Denzel Valentine. Two of them were hurt, and our idiot coach didn't play the third option. So that's the story of the season. You know,
I mean, absolutely.
Not much more to say on that one. But I do want to touch on something you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Wendell Carter Jr., especially Lauri Markkanen, the job of the head coach is put your players in position to succeed. Yes. Neither one of those two players were put in position to succeed.
Not at all.
We saw this before in Bulls history. Lou Alding started out great, was a fantastic player for Chicago Bulls under Scott. He goes under Vinny Del Negro, didn't know what he was doing. Vinny Del Negro continually put him in one-on-one position, ISOs. That's not Lou Alding's game. No. And he failed miserably in his two seasons under Vinny Del Negro. Tibbs came in with a better idea of how to use Lou Alding, and he absolutely improved. That's the job of the coach, is put your players in position to succeed. Adapt your system to the talent. Don't ask your talent to adapt to the system. You know, hopefully a better coach will realize that.
Yeah, I think Bolden was starting to, I don't know if he was feeling the pressure from management as the season went along, but after the All-Star break, it seemed like guys were kind of being used differently. Kobe White was shooting a lot more mid-range jumpers, it felt like, after the All-Star break, and that's when he went on that tear where he was just scoring at will. Markkanen, when he came back from injury, too, was attacking the basketball and wasn't just standing like a statue at the top of the key. It was almost like something clicked to where he's like, oh, well, maybe we should just that we should just be forcing a system that doesn't work for these guys on them. And I tell you one thing.
I
would like never want to see another Thaddeus Young 3 in my life, because it was just unbearable. Every time we went to shoot it, I just groaned because it was just terrible. That's just not his game. And I actually, the first part of this, I said I'd can him, I think. I may have talked myself out of it. But I went back and forth on him quite a bit. But I've always liked Thaddeus Young, and I just felt like everybody on the roster was just in a position that didn't fit their game, and it was, except maybe Zach LaVine. And when you have all these guys playing out of position, this is exactly what you expect, the kind of season we had. You know, and again, that's on Boylan. That's on Boylan. So the next guy on the roster before we get to Zach LaVine is Lauri Markkanen. I think we're both in agreement on him, but let me get the contract details here. One more year on his contract. I think he's a restricted free agent. $6.7 million owed next year. Rumors coming around that he is not looking to sign an extension. I see that on Twitter this week. This morning season for him, 14.7 points a game, 6 rebounds, only assist and a half, 0.8 steals, 0.5 blocks, 42% shooting from the field, 34% from three. And only 29.8 minutes per game, which I want to talk to you about, too. So, Fred, would you can or keep Lauri Markkanen?
Well, that's a lot tougher question. I mean, I thought he had the most disappointing year based on expectations for any Bull. Sure. You know, a lot of that had to do with Jim Boylan, but a lot of that had to do with Lauri Markkanen. He missed a lot of freaking wide-open three-point shots. And to me, everything that flows from Lauri Markkanen, all the good that comes from him, is starts and ends with his three-point shot. If he's hitting that at a 38% to 40% rate, good things are going to happen. It's going to open up the ability for him to drive, to dish, to do things. But if he's shooting at a 34.4% like he was, that's a massive, massive difference. That's from, you know, good to average. And he just doesn't have enough in his game overall to compensate for not shooting the ball well from the perimeter. That's what he is. He's a stretch four. That's what he should be. He should be an elite stretch four, the poor man's Dirk Nowitzki. And he wasn't even remotely that. You know, I thought he was just a very disappointing season. I also thought he was more athletic in previous seasons and kind of a little bit more aggressive as a rebounder. Just a step down in every facet of the game this year. And I can't really tell what percentage of that is on Boylan, what percentage is on Lowry, what percentage is on his teammates who didn't, you know, set him up for success. But it's kind of clear to me, even though they haven't had a huge, you know, sample set to judge this by, I don't know if LaVine and Markkanen are a great pair. And I think one of those guys might have to go if you want to really get the best out of one or the other.
I fully agree with that. I think I've written pieces about that. And usually I get a lot of pushback saying, oh, we can't trade either one of them, they're both good. But at some point, you have to just, the writing's on the wall. So let me give you so last year, he just to give people an idea of what his stats were, he was 18.7 points, 9 rebounds, shot 43%, about the same field goal percentage, and then 36% again for three. His three-point attempts stayed about the same, but he had 4 less field goal attempts overall between the two seasons. I did a little research here. Guys at age 21 years old that average 18-8 in a season. I'm going to give you some names. Anthony Davis, Shaq, Luka, Karl-Anthony Towns, Magic, Chris Bosh, Terry Cummings back in the day, Tim Duncan, Blake Griffin, wow. John Collins, which shocked me a little bit, DeMarcus Cousins, Elton Brand, DeAndre Ayton, and Brook Lopez is on this list too, Kevin Garnett, Chris Webber, Amari Stoudemire, and Larry Markkinen's on this as well. There's a few other, Cliff Robinson, there's a few other names on here. Antoine Walker, which kind of made me laugh. Bernard King. But my point is, like, at one point he was, just last season he was 18-8. He's, you know, PER-wise, he's toward the bottom of this list. There's only 34 guys before the age of 21 that had at least 18 points and 8 rebounds. I just don't know what happened to him this year. And I don't know if I buy the narrative that he was more injured than what we knew with the oblique injury and all this kind of stuff. It's possible. He just looked like he was not touching the ball. He looked like he was just out of – he just didn't look comfortable out there for the majority of the season. His usage dropped from 25% to 21% over the course of the season – or from last season to this season. And I always thought of him – it's funny you compared him to Dirk, and I think a lot of people do – I always looked at him as the evolution of Tom Chambers. Like his game always reminded me of Tom Chambers more, just because he was a tall guy who was very athletic and just it just seemed like an easy scorer. But he just had more range than Chambers, and I always thought that, you know, if he was used more like that he would be more effective. But I don't know. I still think I agree with you when you say they might have to make a choice between the two. I think we've seen enough evidence from Zach LaVine at this point to decide if he's a franchise player, possibly, whereas Markkinen definitely has more upside at this point. And, you know, I think you have to separate him to find out, unfortunately. And I don't know if, you know, how that would work out. But I would keep Lowry. I think he's a special player, potentially, and I don't know.
I do feel he's not going to be number one. I used to have, you know, visions of grandeur that he could develop into number one. Mm-hmm. I think you just have to have that inner drive, that inner nastiness a little bit to be that guy, and he just doesn't have it. Like, I don't think he's got the killer instinct that you need to be the alpha on a team. I think he's a great supporting, you know, like the second Robin.
Yeah.
Especially if you can get that three-point shot going, you know, and really open up the floor for his teammates. But, you know, it's just so disappointing because he was like a 25-12 at one point last year in February. Oh, yeah. He was really starting to see the development, and he just definitely took a step back. You know, we'll see how he is under a new coach. Let's just hope that he, again, to me, the biggest thing is he's got to start hitting that three more consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. So last guy, Zach LaVine, give you an idea of his contract, $19.5 million next year and $19.5 million 2021-2022. Obviously, best player on the team this year, 25.5 points a game, 4.8 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 1.5 steals, which is kind of surprising. Shot 45% from the field, 38% from three, and 34.8 minutes a game. So, Fred, would you can or keep the polarizing Zach LaVine?
Yeah, this is the toughest question out of them all, because there's so much to love about Zach LaVine at 24. You know, I thought he had a fantastic season overall. 25 points, 38% from three, which you love, very underrated, 80% at the free throw line, got to the line more, 5.6 attempts per game. I just thought he was fantastic in almost every facet of the game. The biggest issue I had with Zach is I think in the fourth quarter and the game comes, I didn't think he played well at all. I think he had a lot of bad games down the stretch that were very winnable games, and he got into the hero ball mode. And that's not Zach LaVine's best mode. You know, I mean, hey, he had a great night against Charlotte, hit a lot of incredible shots. But to me, his best game of the year, he had a game where we won at Washington. Mm-hmm. He was facilitating. Mm-hmm. He was absolutely fantastic down the stretch. And I think when he really tries to concentrate on facilitating, passing the ball a little bit more than he does. He had 4.2 assists. I'd love to see that number closer to 6-7. Yes. And maybe take a little bit off the points, you know, average like a 20 in 6 assists as opposed to 25 points in 4. I think he'd be significantly better. You know, he was 1.5 steals. I thought he improved defensively, but he's still never going to be a great defender. I just have real serious questions on whether or not Zach LaVine could ever be an alpha for a winning team. He absolutely could be the best player in a losing team. He's proven that over the last few years. But it's not conducive for whatever reason to winning. That obviously, if you get more talent around him, might help. But I think there needs to be serious questions. He's never been on a winning team. And this is, what, sixth year he's going into, I think? I can't recall.
I think it's year seven, right? Year six, so he's in year seven now.
We got a really tough question. I mean, he's 2 years into this contract. It's a bargain, relative to everybody complaining about it. It ended up being a great decision, signing a four-year deal, just under 20 per year. Is he worth a max contract? I think somebody's going to give it to him. I would really have severe reservations about doing that. What do you think?
I would never give him a max contract. I was really interested when they re-signed him to the deal he's got now, because I was really when they announced the deal, I was like, I think that's fair. I still don't feel great about it because I don't know what he is. I don't know that they're treating him like he's a franchise player. There's just no evidence that he is. Like, what are you gonna? You look at his career winning percentage; it's abysmal, and that's not all on him. Obviously, I mean, he's played on some bad teams, but. At some point when you're the alpha, quote, when you're supposed to be the alpha, you're supposed to impact the game in a different way. And we just have not seen that. You brought up the assist in the Washington game in particular. I remember losing my mind on Twitter about that pass he made to Wendell Carter for the dunk. I think it was a dunk that won the game. It was a great play. And I've been waiting for the two or three seasons he's been here in Chicago to see that, because that's the winning plays that great players make. And when you look at his stats, I've read about this, I've mentioned this before, there's this invisible line in NBA history, and you can do 20 points per game, but less than 5 rebounds, 5 assists per game, and he's at 25, 4, and 4, basically. If you look at guys who have seasons like that, you get a mixed bag of players like George Gervin, Allen Iverson, and World Be Free are the top three. And then you go on down the list, and Kiki Vandeweghe's number 6 on that list. It's you just never know. When guys don't impact the game more than just scoring, it becomes a very mixed bag. And I think for him to take that next leap to be a great player, he's got to get above that 5 rebounds, 5 assists number to have a more positive impact. And like I say, he's going into year 7. And at some point, you just are who you are. I know he's only 24, but 7 years as a pro, and we haven't seen it yet. And I just don't think at some point you have to say it's not there. And I don't know. I would can him. I think he's the most valuable asset. And you've seen some promising things from Kobe at the end of last season, right before the stoppage, that maybe you'd feel good enough. And I don't know. It's such a hard decision, because if he does go somewhere else and plays well and becomes that kind of franchise player, you have all that egg on your face as a new administration. But I'm very much with you that there's a lot more questions than answers with Zach LaVine at this point. And I like him. I like his personality. He seems like a good guy. He seems like a good teammate. But I just, when you're treating somebody like this, like the alpha, and he hasn't shown any evidence of it, to me that's when you just have to move on and try something different.
Well, if Kobe White keeps on taking the steps that he showed in the second half of the season after the All-Star game, it's going to be interesting to see if these two can work together. It's part of the reason, I'm disappointed we didn't get to see enough of them together in the starting backcourt. But I have hopes it can become a poor man's Portland with McCollum. I would love to see something like that develop.
Sure.
And maybe even better than a poor man's, poor man's Portland, with White eventually really – taking that step, hopefully, and it'll be interesting to see. But again, I think they're similar in that, to me, they're both kind of tweeners. They're not really Zach's not a true point guard or a true shooting guard. He's kind of like a combo guard, and I think that's the same with White. I think he's not a true point guard. He's more of a combo guard, not a true shooting guard. So that they can kind of, I feel the same way about Lillard and McCollum in Portland. So obviously, none of these players are in the stratosphere that Lillard is right now. No. But who knows one day if Kobe White can get there. And I definitely have high hopes now. I was very disappointed until the All-Star break. But after the All-Star break, you'd have to be a moron not to be excited.
Oh, yeah. The comp I gave Kobe White in part one of this thing was Jamal Crawford. Do you think that's fair comp? That's who he reminds me of when I watch him.
No, play. No. I love Jamal Crawford, but Jamal Crawford, number one, was just atrocious defensively. I never felt like he was he's a bench player. I never felt like he was a great, great player. I think Kobe White's got a much higher ceiling than Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford ever make an All-Star team? I don't think so.
I don't think so. No, he was more of an energizer off the bench. But I was thinking about like when the Bulls drafted him, and they were trying to make him into just a pure point guard, kind of like what they were doing with Kobe this year, and it just wasn't that. And it took him a lot of teams, a lot of stops for somebody to figure out that, hey, maybe we should just let these guys shoot. And once they eventually figured that out, he became what he is, what people remember him as. But early on, it was just not that simple with him.
Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, because people forget, young Jamal Crawford was like, there's a lot of people comparing him to like Jalen Rose, and like just because of his size, and they thought he had the passing ability and all this stuff. He just wasn't that. I mean, he was just a very different player than him. They eventually unleashed him, and I think you could say that about a lot of the players on this Bulls team. That remember Tyson Chandler? They tried to make him a small forward when he came in, and he eventually found his place as a rim protector and a starting center on a championship team. And maybe we'll look back in 10 years at some of these guys and be like, "Why in the world did the Bulls do this?" when it was just sitting right there in front of them. I don't know. I like overall. I really like the young guys we have. I'm with you. I like Markin and Wendell. I like Kobe. And Hutchinson. I'm really big on Hutchinson too. And also Gafford. I really like this team. I think they have a good foundation. It's just molding the pieces into winning core, and they need the right coach to do that. That goes back to Boylan.
I have no idea, unfortunately. I thought before the season that those four would, or especially those three, less so with Kobe White, was probably, because I wasn't a huge fan of the draft pick. I felt that those three were going to really develop into something special. Didn't remotely come close to happening. In fact, now out of all the four, I think Kobe White has the highest ceiling, and I'm still a little unsure of what. I have no idea what Lauri Markkanen can be. I know Wendell Carter Jr. is already excellent defensively, and he could be a first or second All NBA defensive player, but I have no idea what he can do in the offensive end. And we know what LaVine is, right? He's on the edge of an All Star, but it's not translating into great a lot of wins. So
no.
Questions galore, basically, even after the season. So that's why I wanted 8 more games. But, I guess my opinion is the outlier.
If you had to keep 3 of those, is Lauri Markkanen your outlier there? 3 of Kobe, Wendell, Zach,
say, and believe it or not, out of those 3, I'd actually probably say, I almost hate to say this, but just I'd say LaVine, just because I think he's going to demand the most money. And I just don't think he's going. I think he's going to get a max deal. I don't think he's worth a max deal. There's guys you pay a max deal to because you have to, because there's more max deals available than there are worthy players. Max worthy players, he'll get it. I don't think he's worth it.
I'm absolutely fascinated to see what the new Bulls management will actually do with him going forward. It seems like they're trying to involve him with some of these decisions. I saw just a tweet about that the other day. But he's been one of the more polarized. It seems like the media and like analytics guys just don't really like him as much as Bulls fans do. The casual Bulls fans just love him. But it seems like analytics and smart guys just don't really find the appeal to him. I've heard Zach Lowe kind of jab about him a little bit, and Bill Simmons and just a lot of NBA guys like that just really don't like his game. And I wonder how management is going to feel about his game. So I don't know. It's like you said, more questions than answers at this point, and I would have liked to see 8 more games too, to see if we could find the answers though.
Yeah. Now we got to wait till December and see what kind of moves they make. I mean, it's such a mess. It starts and ends with Boylan being replaced. That's got to be number one. And if it doesn't happen, I don't know what to say. It's not a good sign.
No, not at all. Well, Fred, I appreciate you coming on here. Tell the people where they can find you if they don't know already.
ChicagoBullseye.com. Check me out there, Chicago Bullseye. I got a. I've been talking this up, but obviously, I didn't want to launch it. You know, when obviously there was more important things going on, far more important things going on in our nation.
Sure.
We had to focus on our attention on that. But absolutely. Sometime in the next probably 10 days, I'm going to release a great song called Heinrich. I know you were a big fan, and I hope you. There's a lot of hidden meaning in the song. I hope you maybe listen to it, and maybe it'll change your opinion of the great Kirk Heinrich, and for better or worse. And check it out. So that's coming out. And then also Bulls HQ with Mark from Australia, Mark K from Australia, who's very entertaining and enjoyable too, as I educate him on every episode. So it's a lot of fun. It's good stuff.
But check it out. Let me clarify. I am not a Kirk Heinrich supporter.
Oh, you're not? Oh, good.
Well, thank God. Oh, no,
I can't remember. That's right. Yeah, you're not a Ben Gordon guy.
I did write a piece for the Bulls, the old Bullzone website, RIP to the Bullzone. I wrote a piece about, because remember they, I think this is around the time they traded him, or he was gone, and people were talking about him having his jersey retired. Like, this is a real topic of conversation, and I was like, this is just idiotic.
So stupid. Yeah,
and I started looking into it, and then I started seeing Jerry Sloan's numbers. I was like, maybe it's not that idiotic. If they're going to retire, because Jerry Sloan wasn't. I mean, they made the Western Finals or Western Conference Finals and that stuff with him, but his numbers are just not impressive. And if
Jerry Sloan made two All-Star games.
Yeah,
that team was transformational. They were a winning team. They were a good team. That 70s Bulls teams, and he was like one of the best players. The best teams we had with Kirk Heinrich, like, you know, didn't even win 50 games. Give me a break. You know, I mean, it's like our best 2 years, Heinrich had his career bookended here, right? He had played here for a number of years from 2003 to 2010. We traded his carcass. We had thrown a number one pick to get the carcass of off the roster. Then we had the two best years we've had since the Jordan era. Then he comes back and things go right back down. I mean, come on. It's obvious.
In his prime, he always had this knack. He would dribble down, and he would either beat his man off the dribble or be on a fast break, and he would do this weird thing where he would dribble to the rim, and instead of doing a layup, he would like cut it on the baseline and come back out. And it was like, I remember screaming at the TV, just throw up the layup. Like, he had a wide open layup and would dribble around. Like, and I just never understood why he did that. And then when he came back, oh my gosh, he was washed. And there was nothing about him that was good. And even saying that, I thought the one way the Bulls could have made a competitive series with the Heat in 2012-13 was if he had played, because Boozer just couldn't get the ball where he needed it. And Nate was just not that guy, and Marcus T couldn't get the ball past half court. It was Bert Almsen thinking, man, if Kirk Heinrich was playing, at least he'd get the ball in a position to score.
Yeah.
But he was terrible. That infamous clip of him doing that like weird like 50 pivots against the Clippers and throwing up that pass is just, it's one of my favorite Kirk Heinrich highlights of all time.
Yeah, well, you're gonna enjoy the song then. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, it'll revolutionize, bring us all a couple of laughs. I got that followed up with another song called Tibbs.
Oh God.
I don't think you'll like that one as much.
I won't like that one at all.
No, but it's very good.
Let me ask you, will that song be 60 minutes long in honor of
Pitch? Pretty good. Pretty good, Brandon. 48 minutes. Yeah.
Full 48. No breaks.
It's about 3 minutes long. I get the message across, though. It's a good one. I think you're going to like it.
Oh, gosh. I love it. Well, Fred, again, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you coming on, and this was a lot of fun, and we'll have you back on soon. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good, brother. Good talking to you, Brandon. You too. All the best to you and your family.
You too. Thanks.
All right, man.